Greetings, Earth Explorers. Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us tonight. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State up near the Canadian border. It's kind of cool today, about 66 degrees. Our AccuWindow forecast says no rain, just sunshine. The solar wind today is 448.2 kilometers per second. However, the proton density is up to 2.0, so if you're out in the sunshine, make sure to have some sunscreen on. The sun is blank today, no sunspots, and a few little minor ones during the week, but they kind of faded away before anything got serious. Also wanted you to know that now, since the addition of a fixed zero-gravity toilet, courtesy of the Japanese space crew, the International Space Station's toilet is now working again. Yesterday, astronauts replaced a malfunctioning gas-liquid separator pump, and after a series of three tests, two bean burritos, the replacement appears to be a success. Mission Control Moscow has given the station's crew a go to resume normal operations of the toilet system. And also, you should know that the space station is now large enough that absolute darkness is no longer required to see the International Space Station. It's now brighter than Venus, and more than one listener has reported seeing it in broad daylight. If you want to find out when it's going to come over your place, just going to heavens-above.com, put in your zip code, and it will tell you when the International Space Station is going to come over where you live. All you have to do is go outside and plus or minus about 60 seconds, and it's probably because your watch is off a little bit, not because the space station is slowed down for any reason. You will be able to see it come over your place as well. It's very cool to watch. It's very bright, and it takes about 2 minutes to go from horizon to horizon. So, very interesting. You need to get out there and see that in case you'd like to see something the size of a couple of city buses go overhead with about a quarter of an acre of solar panels beside it. It's kind of spectacular to see. When the sun sets tonight, I do want you to go outside really quick and just look west, right after sunset. Okay, the moon's going to set not too long after that, but Saturn, Mars, and the slender crescent moon are making a pretty line across the sky. In fact, they will make a nice triangle tonight. Consider it a prelude to an even better show. Maybe tomorrow night. They'll make a nice tight celestial triangle tonight. You should be able to pick it up pretty easily at three planets. Regulus will be in there too. If you've never seen Regulus, you'll be able to pick it up. If you need to, pick up a Sky Scout, though. It's a really neat telescope. You look up through it, and it has an internal GPS in it, and it will identify the stars for you. So you can tell what Sagittarius is and Capricorn and what Orion looks like, and you'll know what star is what. It really enhances the astronomy lessons of your household. You don't have to take those paper charts out there and say, okay, now wait a minute, this is north, and if I've got my left hand this way, then that star chart, no, that doesn't look right. Just get you a Sky Scout and check it out. Also, Phoenix robotic arm has taken several scoops out of Mars. The resulting trench reveals a splash of mysterious white material just below the topsoil. The white substance in the trench is an unknown. It could be ice, salt, or something else entirely. Researchers may have found a clue in images from Phoenix's onboard microscope. This week, the microscope got its first look at specks of dust and soil, and there was a translucent particle shining relatively white against the ambient red. Researchers say it looks like a grain of salt, but they can't be sure. The final answer won't be known until Phoenix tips a sample into the lander's mass spectrometer. If you want to know how a mass spectrometer works, it doesn't really tell you exactly what the molecular formula is, but it does give you the molecular weight, and then you can kind of match it up to tables that you have that match up to that molecular weight. It's going to be kind of interesting because Mars has been subjected to slightly different solar radiation than the Earth, and it's quite possible that some elements don't quite weigh exactly what they do here on Earth. Hydrogen protons or neutrons might be just slightly older or more irradiated than those here on Earth, and they might be slightly different. It's going to be an interesting chemistry class, so stay tuned for chemical analysis. Last week, we featured an archive of Joseph LaStella. If you missed that archive, you can go back to October 28th and listen to that archive. Joseph LaStella is the president of Green Star Products. He is a world record holder with electric cars, very successful in that realm, and he also is the founder of Green Star Products. He currently still serves as the president of that company, and that company is now leading the world in algae for diesel fuel research. We're going to tell you a little bit more about that later on in the first hour. I also wanted to remind you that the phone lines are going to be open all night. We do not have a guest tonight. Again, we want to extend an invitation to you, the listener. You're our other resident expert. And the many thousands of you that are out there who have not had a chance to call in or who have sat back and listened to our many fine guests that have been on this program, today is your chance. You can call in toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free 877-489-6350. And anywhere else, on-planet or off-planet, you can reach us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185. We'll take all calls. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about. Only two things we don't really do on this program are conspiracy theories and ghost stories. Anything else is fair game. We will, even in this very volatile political season, even talk about national and international policy. We also want to definitely remind you that Unlocking the Secret, the third volume in the Ark of Millions of Years series, is now on sale. All you have to do is go to x2-radio.com, click on the Ark of Millions of Years book cover, or you can click right on the Buy Now button below it, and you can pick up that book. Now, the hardcover and softcover are both out, and the audio book is being recorded as we progress each week, and we'll have it on very soon. Now, there are a couple of events coming up that we want you to get prepared for. We're going to let you know at the beginning of each hour. This is a three-hour program. So if you're not getting all 3 hours, it's probably because your affiliate is only carrying 1 hour, or you're not listening at bbsradio.com. But in any case, the two events, one is the Tesla Tech conference. It is coming up July 31st through August 3rd. And I am going to be presenting a Hollow Earth presentation. If you're near that venue in Texas, you should make the drive down there. This is going to be the latest information on Hollow Earth theory, and we will give you a pretty cool update on the status of the expedition. So I'll be speaking on the 31st at 5 p.m., and there are many fine speakers going to be there. You'll be able to access the registration page by simply going to x2-radio.com. We'll have a link on there sometime tonight. Backing up a little bit, July 4th weekend, you need to make yourself down to Mount Adams, Washington. This is, just go to eceti.org, E-C-E-T-I.org. And get registered. This is probably, if you really want to break into ufology and you really want to be exposed to the phenomenon of orbs, which are energy entities that are picked up by digital photography, you really want to know what they're about, this is the conference for you. If you live in the Pacific Northwest, if you live anywhere along the Sierra Nevadas, California, this is a must. Now, it is by far the most cost-effective conference that you will go to. The cost is very low. The scenery is absolutely amazing. And if you like camping, the conditions are tremendous. It's warm during the day, cool at night. Speakers literally from early in the morning till after dark. And sky watching events every night. Par excellence. If you've never seen a UFO and you want to see one, everyone in this field of ufology agrees that Mount Adams is the hottest place in the country. Very few people come away disappointed, including yours truly. I've been there 2 years. I plan on going again this year. I'll be speaking the first night, and they'll have other speakers like Michal Ledwith and others. I guarantee you will enjoy yourself, and it'll be a pleasure to meet you. So we want you to show up there. The other event that's going to happen just before that, July 2nd, is a radio event. I'm talking about a broadcast radio event. And this is July 2nd on Coast to Coast AM with George Noory. I will be on there with George. We'll be talking about the Hollow Earth Expedition and Volume 3 of the Ark of Millions of Years. This book completes about a 1,500-page series of books, a trilogy called The Ark of Millions of Years. If you'll remember, this is what Noah called his ark anciently. And the knowledge contained in these 1,500 pages, these three books, Volume 1, Volume 2, and Volume 3, and the third is entitled Unlocking the Secret, cover the origin destiny of the Earth, the harvest of the end times associated with the year 2012, and then the final book in the trilogy covers events, preparations, both metaphysical and physical, that you can do to get prepared for these end times. Also, part two of this book is basically the work manual for the workshop that we give called Physics of the Soul. We're going to cover that in our third hour tonight, and we're also going to cover that July 4th weekend at the conference at Mount Adams. If you want to register for that, go to eseti.org and get registered for that. I promise you're going to enjoy it. If you've just been an aficionado of this genre, it is about time that you became involved. This is the place you want to be. We also wanted to give you an update on the movie One Anunnaki. This is the movie that is a independent feature film made about Zacharias Sitchin's work. John Gress owns the company Jaguar Films and also Florida Effects. And he has shot a completely digital movie that is promising to raise the bar for independent films. We expect that film to come out this year. Now, it has already been shot. It is all the digital backdrops have been done. And it has been in music scoring since the beginning of the year. It's really coming along well. If you go to the website, oneanunnaki.com, that is the number one, and then A-N-U-N-N-I-A-K-I, anunnaki.com. It's a pretty cool website, and it will give you the status of the film at the moment. We want you to go there, check out their online store. Very cool hats, very cool t-shirts, and also some autographed pictures from the staff and the crew of the film. Go ahead and check that out. Also, just by way of news, the book Witness to Roswell. Now, you know, this book was written by two men who, but for all intents and purposes, they have held on to the bone the longest, Tom Carey and Don Schmidt. Don Schmidt recently had some corrective surgery and is recovering nicely from that, I understand. Tom Carey has been in touch with me since he came on the program and has come into the possession of a photograph of what appears to be an object that was discovered in the area of the Roswell crash, a little bit away from the crash. Now, it's like nothing I have ever seen. I have seen the picture. I am under agreement not to disclose the picture, but I can tell you, folks, there's something very, very off-worldly about this object. It is not broken. It's not melted. It is pretty amazing. We know it's not glass. We know it's not a piece of art. We expect to get our hands on this this object. Either it's going to be shipped to us, or we're going to go over to England with the person that actually possesses it, and we're going to examine it ourselves. I don't know if we can take a little sample of it and do some spectrographic analysis of it, but certainly we're going to be able to do some qualitative analysis of it and tell what it is and maybe possibly what it isn't. The important thing is that I have it on good authority, namely Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, that they are very confident that they are going to actually get into the hangar where the craft from the Roswell crash is stored. Now, that is world-breaking news. The thing that makes me feel good is that we are going to try to break that story right here on X Squared Radio. If you're listening to this program tonight live, or if you are listening to it as an archive, we want you to get a hold of your friends. We want you to write us. We want you to write Tom Carey and Don Schmidt. Their website is really easy. It is just RoswellInvestigator.com. RoswellInvestigator.com. Go to that website. These guys are on there. Their email addresses are accessible. And let them know that you support them. Let them know that you are out here and you want to know what's in that hangar, too. And please pick up the book, Witness to Roswell. These two guys have done an exhaustive series of investigations that leave no doubt, no stone unturned, that there was a crash of a UFO and there was a military cover-up of that crash. There is more to come, people. This story is not done, not by any stretch of the imagination. You know the way governments normally work. Come in, sweep it up, put it away, and before too long, the batteries will wear out in the cameras and people will forget about it and it will just go away. This one has not gone away. It is still there. And these two guys, Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, these are the two experts that have kept it alive, kept all the evidence together, and they have put it all in this book, Witness to Roswell. You can just go to x2-radio.com, click on the Witness to Roswell book cover, and it will take you directly there. Now, next week on X Squared Radio, we are going to have a UFO researcher and author on the program. Her name is Ann Druffel. She dates her interest in the UFO question from 1945, when, as a schoolgirl, she viewed a bright yellowish object very high in clear blue skies over Long Beach, California. That memory stuck in her mind, and she has stayed with it her entire life. She's written a staggering series of books. If you get a chance, you should read Firestorm. Now, this is a book about James E. McDonald's fight over UFO science. For those of you that don't know who James E. McDonald was, he was an atmospheric physicist of international renown and respect. And he literally took on the cover-up, the Blue Book cover-up, and did an outstanding job of putting evidence together that UFOs do in fact exist, and that treating people and obfuscating people like silly, imaginary, hallucinating people was ridiculous, and that these things really do exist. Great book. Awesome. A lot of evidence in this book. And the other book, and she's written a long series, but the last book is How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. Now, I know that the title sounds a little bit like, gee, that might not be the book for me, but trust me, you get your hands on this book and read it, you're going to be amazed at the history of interaction between off-worlders and humans, Earth humans. Now, this is really a staggering amount of work. Once you get picking up on her books, you're going to read them all. I'm telling you, it's well written, it's well documented, it's put together, it's not fringe by any stretch of the imagination. She is going to be on the program. We'll talk about some of her six books, and it's going to be a great interview. We don't want you to miss it. That's coming on next week. That's the 15th of June. So we don't want you to miss that. And also on the 29th, we have a great interview coming up. So don't pass that up. And also don't get discouraged that we have not had a guest on every single week, because things have been quite busy up here in this small town in northern Washington State. You wouldn't think much would go on here, but you're going to find out in a minute what's been going on up here. It is absolutely revolutionary. Now, it doesn't take very much, perhaps one day or even half a day, for you to come in contact with the burden of high oil prices. They are reported to be, by some of the best market makers out there, oil is going to be $150 a barrel by July 4th. Up here in Spokane, which is not far from where we are, the little scooters, the ones that get 100 miles per gallon, they're gone. They're all sold out, folks. People that thought they would never ride a motorcycle are now tooling back and forth to work with a jacket on and a backpack, because the price of fuel has gotten to the point now where it's beginning to bite into other things that people like to do, like eat and perhaps go to the movies. So the economy is still clicking right along. However, the Dow took a 400-point dive on Friday, and unemployment went up, the highest jump in 22 years. It isn't over, folks. It isn't over. We are not talking about crisis here, but we are talking about awareness, energy awareness. You know, it used to be, in the not-too-distant past, that we here in the United States, home of the brave, were considered by the rest of the world to be the gluttons of the planet. That we consumed more energy per capita than all the other nations combined, it seemed. That we were wasteful, that we had cheap energy and we took it for granted and we wasted it proliferously. And maybe that's true. Maybe if you have been to Europe and paid $9 a gallon, $9.50, $10.50 a gallon for petrol, you would say, gee, we really have it good in the United States, only paying $3.90 a gallon for gas or $4.98 a gallon for diesel fuel. Maybe we have it maybe not so bad. Maybe we do have 400 horsepower when 50 would do. But maybe such is not the case, because what has happened is other nations, nations much older than America and much larger than America. We have about 375 million people in this country. That makes up a province in China. That makes up a small county in India. Well, those two countries, China and India, now have a blossoming middle class. And they want everything now. They want cars, they want televisions, they want microwave ovens, they want Nikes, they want cell phones, and every single thing that goes with it. They want cars, they want freedom, they want the ability to move about and to move their commerce about. And those things take energy. They take fuel, they take steel, they take plastic. They take raw materials to the point that if you have bought any steel lately, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you have bought any wiring, copper, for your house, you'll know what I'm talking about. You'll know why people are now putting plastic plumbing pipe in their house instead of copper pipe. Because the price is prohibitive if you can get it. If you've ordered an electric motor, if you've ordered some kind of sensor or a piece of equipment, you know what they tell you on the phone? That will be 7 to 10 days shipping. It'll come in 3 weeks. That's 5 weeks out. Why? Because no one is carrying inventory. Can't afford it. Too much money tied up in inventory. Prices are changing so fast, and everyone has gone to just-in-time delivery. There just simply is no inventory, and price sheets sometimes change in the middle of a day. If you don't believe me, just don't buy fuel in the morning, wait till lunchtime and watch it jump 20 cents a gallon. You know I'm telling the truth. This is what it is caused by. Oil prices have gone up because demand has gone up and supply has gone down, and it is going down every day. Yes, they are drilling. Yes, there is promise of shale. Yes, there is promise of reservoirs in North Dakota and Anwar and off the coast of Mexico. But, you know, there has not been a major oil find since 1976. 1976, there has not been a major oil find. Add to that the fact that there has not been a refinery built in America in 35 years. And now you will see why oil prices and gas prices and diesel prices are where they are. Now you see why corn and wheat and barley have gone up in price. This is the reason they have gone up in price. Do not fall to the misinformation that has been put out there that alternative fuels such as ethanol and biodiesel have driven the cost of food up. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, it is misinformation. It is disinformation designed to make you mad at alternative fuels. And those of you that listen to this program know exactly why that might happen. And so the rest of this hour, we've got about 35 minutes in this hour, I do want to remind you that the phone lines are open, toll-free USA, 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185. This is the hour of truth for energy. If you want to discuss this subject, call in and we will be happy to discuss it. No misinformation. No deception. This is the moment of truth. Here we go. Let's talk a little bit about generation. Now, just as a point of personal and professional investigation into new energy technologies, we have found, and mind you, this is no affront to any private inventor or thinker out there, but just to let you know that we honestly believe that the breakthrough in new energy technology is not going to come from the oil companies. I'm sorry, I really didn't mean to say that, you know, the brightest minds aren't working for the oil companies, but honestly, we believe that if they do have the technology, they're going to let us know when they're darn good and ready, when they've gotten squeezed every dollar they can out of the technology they already have. That might be too late, people. We honestly believe that the best energy technology is going to come out of the basement, out of the attic, out of the garage of inventors and engineers in this country. We honestly believe that there are retired engineers, there are engineers who have side projects that their companies don't want them working on at work. They are tinkering with them at home, and there is brilliance out there, people. Brilliance. There are Teslas, there are Einsteins, and there are Edisons, and there are Newtons out there in your neighborhood right now, tinkering in their backyard while they're listening to X Squared Radio. And I can tell you, somewhere out there is the next energy generation breakthrough. And it's going to come from an area that you just couldn't imagine. Almost otherworldly technology. Our physics and the product of our public education system has boxed in the thinking of most Americans. We think that you have to have a little cord plugged into the wall in order to get electricity, in order to turn on your television or charge up your electric car. Answer a simple question. What is electricity? Anybody out there got the answer? You can call in. Tell me what electricity is. I've asked electrical engineers, I've asked physicists, and I can tell you the answer isn't as easy as you think. We don't really know. Sure, we know the results of it. We run an extension cord to the plug in the garage and we run the shop vac and vacuum out the car. That's electricity. But what is electricity? Where do the electrons come from? How do the electrons move? Why is it that when we move a wire through a magnetic field that we get current flow? Interesting questions. We have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
How you doing, Dr. Brooks? It's Ramon from New York.
Hi, Ramon. Welcome to the program.
I wanted to ask you about Dr. Stephen Greer's the Orion Project. Have you had a chance to look into
I have had a chance to speak with Dr. Stephen Greer on numerous occasions. I have met him in person, and we have talked about energy innovations from time to time. But I'm not familiar with the Orion project, unless it is a project that is designed to attract new energy technology to his organization. Can you fill me in?
So far, from what I've seen, he's looked in, he's basically tried to get a few, sorry, I'm moving away from the radio. He's been trying to get a lot of, like, serious scientists that work in black projects and people who have done stuff in their, in the garage.
Oh, okay.
And he's working on a few things. I know from what I saw on the website, he's working.
Hang on a second, Ramon. Hold on.
Ramon, can you speak up or do something a little differently with your phone? Your phone line's really hurting us.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
That sounds good.
Does that sound better?
Yeah, it sounds better to me. Does it sound okay to you, Don?
Not really, but we'll go with it.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's move on.
What did you get so far?
Well, we were talking about the Orion Project. Now I know that there are a lot of organizations out there trying to attract new energy technology to their side. And I'm not going to say anything about motivations, but you know, the idea is that something. Attract the inventors to them. Some organizations, like Phoenix Science Foundation, they just want to provide manufacturing. They realize that that's the one thing that's missing. That's the one piece that's missing. We got the great ideas, we got the great demand, but there ain't nobody building anything. We hear a lot of clucking, but we're not seeing any eggs. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
So,
The other thing that I keep hearing is there's certain scientists that actually supposedly have made breakthroughs, but the military or the big conglomerates will come after them and either try to buy them out or threaten their families. Have you yourself heard anything?
Well, I have heard that, you know, if somebody's going to make a breakthrough, let's say in battery technology, and you're a battery company, the smart thing to do is to go to the guy and ask him if you can buy him out. I mean, you are protecting your multi-million-dollar or perhaps billion-dollar organization by buying out your competition. And the inventor of this new battery technology is probably picking crumbs with the sparrows anyway. And so he welcomes the check and he sells out and you never get to see the new battery technology. Of course, that happens. We see it in the car business. You see it in any kind of manufacturing business. However, there is some very strong energy technology that's out there. And I can tell you from experience that the government is doing, well, I should say the government. I don't really think there's any such thing as a government. Bureaucracies within the government are very interested in alternative energy being produced. And every single state has multi-million dollar bankrolls trying to qualify and finance this technology into coming forth. And that's a fact. I don't see the government working against anybody trying to bring forth new energy technology.
The reason why I brought that up, because I was trying to look for there's an article from an Israeli paper, an English paper, where this guy had discovered how to basically have a motor run on just pure water, and some big conglomerate came to try to buy him out, and he said he didn't want to. I was trying to look up for the article myself, and I couldn't find it, so I don't know if it's true or not.
But well, if you're interested, there are several water engine technologies out there. They center around splitting the hydrogen-oxygen bond using a little bit of energy and then bringing the hydrogen and oxygen back together to make water, getting a whole lot of energy out of it. That's basically what it stems on. Now, some of it is water injection into conventional gasoline or diesel engines. That certainly does increase power. But the cars that run on absolutely pure water without any other input other than that, if you're interested in seeing that technology, I recommend that you make your way to the conference July 4th weekend at Mount Adams. I can't say any more about it, but if you're interested in seeing that, putting your hands on it, you need to come to that conference.
Yeah, I heard James talk about it yesterday, actually. Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
All right, Ramon, you can call back anytime. Tell your friends.
Definitely will.
All right, thank you. All right, so in as far as generation, there are a couple of technologies out there that, actually there are three technologies out there, that there have been amazing patents filed, and I understand the owners of the patents are very open to licensing. One, of course, is wind energy. You don't have to travel very far in this country before you see a wind generator. Some of them are very large, some are small. Excuse me. There's no mystery to this. Every single automobile in the United States that runs on gasoline or diesel fuel has at the front of it an alternator. Now the alternator is belt driven. It is turned at a minimum of 1,000 RPM. The engine might be idling at 600 or 800 RPM, but the alternator is geared up. The pulley on the alternator is much smaller than the pulley on the crank, and it's probably turning about four times faster than the engine. So the alternator is turning about 2,000 to 2,500 RPM as a minimum, and can go all the way up to 10,000 RPM. This unit generates AC power, alternating current. It is rectified to DC so that it charges up the batteries in your car, but it naturally puts out alternating current. These have to turn a minimum of 450 RPM in order to go into generation, and they need a slight amount of field voltage. And the field voltage can be provided by a battery, or it can be provided by the generator itself. Of course, the problem with doing that is that if you provide the field voltage by itself, it's more difficult to regulate. In other words, it's more difficult to set it at a voltage and keep it there no matter what the RPM is. So we use a little battery, and we recharge the battery using the generator or the alternator, and we use the battery to set the field voltage so it's easier to regulate. Now, it takes a certain amount of horsepower to turn the alternator, so you need a propeller of a fixed or variable diameter and pitch in order to work with whatever wind conditions you have. Some of these will work with as low as 3 miles an hour wind. Now, I don't know where you live, but up here next to the Canadian border in the eastern desert wheat fields of Washington State, the wind never stops blowing. North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Texas, Arizona, it goes on and on, folks. Wind is everywhere. Now, the difference is that it is expensive to buy a wind generator. The blades are expensive. The bearings are expensive. It's hard to put up. You do have to have some electronics to go with it in order to regulate the power. So during strong winds or light winds, you get usable, reasonable power. Now, here's the drawback. There's no plus to it. It's a supplement. You're not going to get enough electricity to sell back to the electric company and pay off your generator. It's not going to happen. I don't care how big you make it, the more capital you put into it, the further out is going to be your payback. Don't think of it that way. Think of it as though you're trying to take your house off the grid. Now, the average house takes somewhere between 12 and 20 kilowatts, 12 and 20,000 watts, to generate, to supply. And this supplies an air conditioner and your lights and your stove and the microwave and your Wii game and all of that. And your blow dryer and all of that. That's the typical home. Now, bigger homes will get on up around, 25, 30 kilowatts, and smaller homes down around 10 or 12 kilowatts, but it's in that range. So if you're going to supply 100% of your energy, you're going to need a sizable battery bank to take in the days that don't have much wind, and also take in the times when you need more energy than what the wind can give you. For instance, If it's 10 below zero outside and you're not heating with wood, you're going to need a lot of electrical power to heat your house. Or if it's 110 degrees outside and you live in a humid area and you use Freon for your cooler instead of a swamp cooler, which obviously doesn't do any good in Tennessee or Georgia or Louisiana, you need a Freon air conditioner, which means you need a compressor, which means you need some horsepower. It's going to take about 50 amps, 30 to 50 amps to run a heat pump air conditioner. You're going to have to generate that power or supplement that power with wind. That can be done. That can take your light bill from $250 a month down to about $80 a month. That's worth it. That's what you look for. You're going to look to supplement your power supply. The other thing that you can do with wind power is you can pump things. You can move water. You can irrigate with it. Gosh, people, we've been doing this since the Civil War. It's not rocket science. Mechanical power generated by wind has run wells since 2 centuries ago. So those kinds of things can be done. Also, you don't have to use the big propellers that the birds fly into and get splattered. You can use egg beater styles. You can use turbine styles. There are things out there that look like soft serve ice cream cones that gather wind. Very low amounts of wind. We looked at a wind generator that used little 12-inch turbine wheels geared together. It was a bank of them. It operated on 2 miles an hour of wind and generated a reasonable amount of electricity. They're out there. It can be done. The other thing that people talk about is solar energy. Solar energy technology hasn't changed since the 60s. The principles are the same. It is basically a silicon activated chip that changes sunlight into current flow. It is almost prohibitively expensive. For 500 watts, it'll cost you about $1,500. So that's basically 5 100-watt light bulbs will cost you more than, $1,500 is a lot of money by anybody's stretch of the imagination. That's 15 tankfuls of gas. It is most effective in direct sunlight. There are inventions out there like lenses, stacked lenses that you can put on top of your silicone panels that gather more light than the square inch of the panel itself. Be careful, though, because these lenses generate tremendous amounts of heat, and I'm talking in maybe over 1,000 degrees. Make sure that your solar cell can take that kind of temperature before you put that on there. There are also collection mirrors that you can put out to collect the energy and concentrate it onto your solar panels. That's out there as well. And solar energy is good. It's nice. It's clean. It does take a long time to pay back. Now, the other generator that's been played with from time to time are wave generators. And these are generators that work off of the waves, ocean waves, swells that occur out past the breakwaters, where the swells in the water can be anywhere from 6 inches to 6 feet. And there are various mechanical devices that have been used to try to collect that potential and kinetic energy. Unfortunately, every single technology that's been tried is not feasible. There is a feasible one. It was patented in 1986. There's been a modification to that patent been made by Mr. Joseph LaStella with the Green Star Products, and that patent is pretty amazing. I can't describe the details of it to you on the air, but if you're interested, we want you to get a hold of us, call in tonight, and or write us. Just write me at bagnew@x2-radio.com, and we'll see if we can get you some information on that. If you live near the coastline, one unit, 100 feet in, actually it has 100 units that go into it will generate half a megawatt. So half a megawatt, half a million watts. Half a million watts, enough to power a small group of houses. So, the structure that is being designed at this moment will generate 50 megawatts. 50 megawatts, people. That's 2,500 homes plus. Lots and lots of small coastal towns, businesses, island operations that could be run virtually for free using wave technology. So that's out there as well. Now, the other thing that we'll talk about in the next hour are alternative fuels. Some real breakthroughs have been made in this. I do want to reiterate that do not fall for the misinformation out there that food prices have been driven up by alternative fuels. This is misinformation, people. It's absolute falsehood. Nothing could be further from the truth. The price of fuel, the price of oil has driven the price of food up. The fact that there are other nations that are now no longer exporting rice, they're not exporting wheat, has put tremendous economic pressure on the food market. Lots of stores, surpluses, have been greatly depleted. They're probably down 75% from where they were 2 years ago. This has nothing to do with the demand put on by ethanol or by biodiesel. We'll cover that in a lot more detail in the next hour, but we definitely want you to make sure that you do not fall for that misinformation. Also in the next hour, we're going to cover a little bit about election updates. We want to make sure that you make an intelligent decision. No, we're not going to influence you one way or the other. We just want you to make an intelligent decision. So, with that, we will take about a 4 minute, 28 second break, and we will be back after these messages. So, don't let yourself be fooled by any disinformation about new energy. And in the third hour, we're going to cover a little bit more of the physics of the soul. So don't go away. And don't forget, phone lines are open all night. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They've come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're glad that you're here with us today. Coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, up against the Canadian border. It's about, my AccuWindow forecast says it's 64 degrees outside and sunny. It's been raining for the last couple of days up here, but it's really beautiful today. In our last hour, we talked about energy. The peak oil has done exactly what the experts, like Joe LaStella with Green Star Products, have said that it was going to do. What has happened is our demand as a country, really, for all intents and purposes, has flattened out. That is to say, the rate of use of energy per capita in the United States has flattened out. Even though we have a lot more gadgets, we have a lot more electronic things in our lives, we're getting better at conservation. Cars are getting more and more fuel efficient. Trucks are getting more and more fuel efficient. Things are a lot more aerodynamic. Tire technology has helped. Lubrication technology has helped. People are not wasting energy the way they were wasting it. For one thing, we can't afford it, but for another, it's just common sense, and we have kind of gotten a green attitude about things. One of the things that I do very commonly see out and about today are hybrid vehicles. In fact, I don't really think that there's a major car maker today that doesn't make a hybrid vehicle. Hybrid means that the motor in the vehicle runs a generator instead of actually driving the car. It works just like a locomotive does. The energy turns, the engine turns a generator which charges a battery, which feeds electric motors which drive the vehicle forward. You wouldn't think that it would be very efficient, but it is, as long as you keep your foot out of it and you drive, economically, then you're going to make better mileage. The Toyota Prius gets somewhere around 60 miles per gallon, depending on how you drive. Honda has a vehicle out that gets 76 miles per gallon, depending on the way you drive. No, you're not going to be able to tow a boat. No, you're not going to win any drag races, but you will get good gas mileage. And the engines are built very, very well. There is great technology inside the motors. Some of them are even utilizing the Miller cycle technology, which is actually quite simple and quite complicated at the same time. If you know anything about engines and you took one apart, you wouldn't recognize it. But if you know something about physics and know something about the Miller technology in building engines, then you would be able to find it. Just to tell you a short story, years ago, when gasoline was cheap, it was a great challenge to see how much horsepower you could get out of a vehicle. We still do it. We still buy cold air intakes and modified intake manifolds and change our timing and put headers on, things just to get more horsepower. We still do it. But there was a great temptation at one time to take ordinary vehicles, like, say, a Porsche, which was taken by Joe LaStella, and the power was increased by almost 60%. It was, the car was taken to Porsche. It was shown to Porsche. Porsche looked at the dynamometer curves on the car and said, we recognize this. This is a Porsche with a turbocharger on it, which is a fuel-air mixture compressor driven by exhaust velocity. And Mr. Listella said, well, that's exactly right, except this vehicle does not have a turbocharger on it. So they agreed to research the vehicle for a short period of time. Joe gave him the keys and the car, came back a couple of weeks later, and the engineer said, okay, two things. We were impressed. You did get 60% more power out of the car than we do, but what really impressed us, how did you do it and still reduce the fuel usage by 30%? And then it hit Joseph. Here is what I need to do. Here is the future of auto technology. It is efficiency, not horsepower. And it wasn't long after that that he competed against the best in the world, Toyota, Honda, General Motors, Chrysler, Ford, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and he beat them all in miles per gallon and turned a faster elapsed time. And this not in a car with bicycle wheels. This was a production car, a Ford Geo. So the technology is out there for conservation. We talked about generation in the first hour. In this hour, we will talk about conservation. The first half and the last half, we'll talk about alternative fuels. We hear conservation all the time. Sometimes you want to go to another town or you want to drive down to Walmart because they have everything that you need. Now we are collecting a list throughout the week. I need a baseball glove, a pair of shoelaces, two pairs of underwear, a greeting card, and a dozen eggs. So you put your list together and you make one trip to Walmart, not five trips to Walmart once a week. Because it takes so much in fuel. Just riding around town costs $20 a day. Yes, $20 a day. People are spending $600, $700 a month to drive around. That's a house payment, people. That's more than people are used to spending on fuel. So people are conserving. In the Spokane area, you can't find a scooter. These are scaled-down motorcycles. They usually have less than 30 horsepower. They also usually go less than 50 miles an hour. The really small ones only go 40 miles an hour. They're great for getting around town. They get about 115 miles per gallon. However, in this country, they're more of a beach community transportation device for, you know, just kind of tooling around the beach. They're not for going to the grocery or riding every day to work. However, if you go to other countries, you go to Bangkok, you go to Kathmandu, you will see families of five on a moped. People learn to conserve. You can't find one in Spokane. They're sold out until September. September, that's 3-4 months away, these things are sold out. Because people cannot afford to spend $500 or $600 a month on fuel. They're riding back and forth to work, they're riding back and forth to school, they're making short trips to the grocery, and they're using the scooter. Yes, they're fun. Of course, they're more dangerous. We're talking something with a 14-inch tall tire or a 12-inch tall tire. That's not what a motorcycle normally runs on. They usually run on something about 21 inches tall, 22, 25 inches tall. It's a much smaller tire. It gives you a lot less contact with the road. They have minimal brakes. And if you're caught in an accident in one of these things, it'll probably be your last. However, this is what people are doing for conservation. They are also recycling. They're gathering their plastics together, their glass together, their paper together. They're doing what they can do to help conserve energy. They're buying paper down at Staples and down at Office Depot and at Walmart. They're buying paper that's made from recycled materials. Companies all over the country are getting what's called carbon credits. These are credits given to them for putting more efficient lighting in, for putting low-volume commodes in, for doing away with lawn sprinkling, all kinds of things to help conserve energy. Let me tell you what they're doing in Europe. We talked about generation, but this also goes along with conservation. Here in this country, we talk about kilowatts and horsepower and all that kind of stuff, and we generate electricity. In Europe, they're coming a new acronym, a new statement of conservation is coming up. It's called cow power. Yes, cow power. No, they don't put their cows into halters and march them around in a circle turning generators. That's not what they do. What they're doing is they're collecting the cow poo on a regular basis, several tons a day, and they're feeding it to biogas generators. These units separate the solids from the liquids, treat them with certain types of bacteria, stir them at just the right rate, contain it and collect it and compress it, and the methane gas that's put off by the cow dew is turned into kilowatts by a methane-powered generator. The methane-powered generator generates heat, which also feeds the biogas system. It also generates excess heat, which can be piped to local buildings, such as prisons or factories or skyscrapers. And the excess electricity, and mind you, a single unit generates 0.64 megawatts. They put several units together, and you can get 1.2 megawatts, 2.5 megawatts. You do the math, people. It just depends on how many cows you have. And they collect the cow poo, and they turn it into electricity, and they turn it into heat, and guess what the byproduct is? You guessed it. High-quality, organic fertilizer, which goes right back out to the fields and is used in place of petroleum products and ammonia, which is currently used as fertilizer in the fields. You want to know how efficient it is? There are over 4,000 of these operating in Europe. One company called MKW Biogas, which is a consortium partner with Green Star Products, we discussed them in the first hour, has built 300 of these. 300. This is established technology, people. Established. Well tried. Tried and true. It has been through all of the failure modes, all of the testing, in all kinds of weather conditions, with all kinds of food being fed to cows, all kinds of cows, and guess what they did? In Europe, they shut off a nuclear power plant. They replaced a nuclear power plant with cow power. Completely renewable, clean cow power. And of course, we know how many of these are operating in the United States. The number's really simple. You guessed it, a big fat zero. Yes, there are biogas generators in the United States, but they do not employ the latest technology, and none of them are energy positive. They are only being used to handle waste as an alternative to waste management. They are not generating a net amount of energy. It's sad. We have communities in the United States of America that have thousands, tens of thousands of cows, dairy cows and feedlots. And every single bit of that cow dung sits in the yard, and the methane goes right into the atmosphere, contributing to global warming. We don't get anything for it. No power whatsoever. The reason I bring this up is there are things that you can do as Americans in your city councils, in your local towns, to ask that this technology, tried and true, proven technology, stuff that can be built in a matter of 2 or 3 months in your community, can provide you enough power to really change the energy bill for your town. Not only would you reduce your methane footprint on the planet, but you reduce your carbon footprint on the planet by conserving electricity, by replacing it with something made by cows, besides steak and milk. So it's there. It is there for the taking. What it takes is interest, involvement, and of course it'll take money. Now let's talk about that just a little bit. In the first hour, Ramon brought up a question. He asked if there were any government agencies or any conspiracies out there that are preventing new energy technology from coming forth. And the answer is no. I really don't believe it. Yes, there may have been some accidents out there. There are all kinds of conspiracy theories that people love to attach themselves to. But the truth of the matter is there are hundreds of millions of dollars recently in the energy bill. By the way, this was the first one passed in 50 years, 5-0, five decades, the first energy bill passed, first energy policy. In that energy policy was $1.2 billion for cellulosic ethanol. Now, ethanol has been in the news, oh my goodness, so much. E85, E10, this is the amount of ethanol added to gasoline. And it's supposed to clean up the gasoline, and it does, but it also lowers the output power of the gasoline. Not very efficient. The most efficient systems for E85, I'm going to use Kentucky as an example. Congressman Ed Whitfield, pretty much the champion of this in western Kentucky, has tried to lead the way in getting ethanol as an alternative to gasoline. And the E85 that's made in western Kentucky is about the most efficient in the country, and it is just barely 1.1 to 1, just barely over 1 to 1. The amount of energy it takes to grow the corn, process the corn, power all the lights, do all the processing, and get the ethanol into the tank is about 10% less than what you get out of it when you burn it in your car. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, Brooks. This is Anne from Ontario calling. How are you?
Hi, Anne. Oh, man, it's good to hear from you. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a long, long time. I'm doing great. I've been listening to your show, and this is usually not something that is up my alley, talking about hybrid vehicles, although I've been looking for a while at getting one for my next vehicle. But before I mention that, I wanted to just tell you that I, on an unrelated subject, I just sent you an email with a picture when you get a chance, if you could take a look at it and tell me what you think of it. It's an orb, and I'm not sure if it's an orb, and I just wanted your opinion on it. It was taken with an analog camera when I was in the Australian outback. Anyways, getting back to hybrid vehicles, I was wondering for the longest time why Honda, you know, that short-lived hybrid Civic that got such great mileage, and why it didn't seem to survive. It was only out just a couple of years, I think, maybe 3-4 years max.
The Honda hybrid vehicle?
It was a Honda Civic hybrid, and I think the last year it was made was like around 2001, 2002,
uh-huh.
And it got amazing mileage.
Well, that's because in 2002, fuel was still pretty cheap. In fact, I think right in there, I think it was 1998, 1999. Gasoline even got down below a dollar there for a little while. In 2002, gasoline was still pretty darn cheap. Now, though, I'll bet you that those Honda hybrid cars, if they're still on the road, I guarantee you, those cars are worth their weight in gold. People are snapping them up. It wasn't really important for people in 2002 to get 76 miles per gallon. The Honda has an Accord out there. They've got a new model coming out that's threatening to get deliver 400 horsepower. 400 horsepower. Also, some of it has to do with looks. Now, the 2002, 2003 Civic Hybrid was ugly. It just didn't look good. The Toyota
right.
Prius at least has some aerodynamics to it. And, you know, the Honda Accord is a good-looking car. And the Honda Element is a good-looking car. And the Honda Odyssey, of course, is a great-looking car. So they usually have pretty good-looking cars. But the Civic was ugly. It looked just like a Ford. And it just didn't
right, I remember. I still see them occasionally on the road. And I know that the Civic had very little storage capacity. I think you could barely squeeze two large adults into one of them. But there's another reason I'm asking this question. It has to do with, and I'm sure you've heard something about it, maybe you've even spoken about it, but I've read some articles about the potential of this electromagnetic field, electrical currents running through these hybrids. Do you know what I'm referring to?
What they do is they put an EM motor. Electromagnetic motors, well, all motors are electromagnetic, but these motors actually went into the rims of the car. Then the rim of the car was actually the motor. And it was very, very efficient because even at very low RPM, in other words, low speeds, 25, 30 miles an hour, the motors were actually very efficient and didn't generate a lot of heat. And the other nice thing about it is when you tapped on the brakes, the motor actually worked as a generator. And so all it really did is when you were touching on the brakes, the computer would reverse the field to the motors at all four wheels, and it turned the wheels into generators. And so it actually used the horsepower that it takes to slow down a car, which is usually about 10 or 20 times the horsepower it takes to drive the car. It takes about 4,000 horsepower to stop a car during an emergency stop. But in regular slowing down, it takes 200 to 300 horsepower to slow down the car. Now, normally we do this by squeezing a metal disc, creating heat, and dissipating that heat into the atmosphere. But the EM cars actually gather the energy out of the braking of the car, the initial braking of the car, and feed it back into the batteries. And it's a very, very efficient way of dealing with that energy. However, the sustainability, the maintainability of the switching and the computers were under question because it's something that is subjected to minus 40 degrees, plus 140 degrees, railroad tracks, you know, all kinds of wear and tear in the way people drive, and they do not hold up very well. 1 or 2 years is about all you can expect to get out of the switching mechanisms. So it is going to be a high maintenance item. So does that answer your question? Oh, I must have lost Anne. Well, I apologize for that. Maybe I just got a little bit too long-winded with it. But those are the electromagnetic engines. Of course, all engines are electromagnetic, but these are EM braking engines, EM braking regathering technology, economizing technology that's being put into electric cars. Very efficient, very conserving way of doing it. But, oh, my goodness, if you ever get in a traffic accident with these cars, it's going to be very expensive. On a couple of fronts. First of all, you're going to smash one of the motors that's inside one of the wheels. That's going to be $1,000. And then, heaven forbid, you actually smash into that battery, or that battery shakes loose somehow in a fender bender or a rear ender, because that battery has lithium in it and is very poisonous. You get in an accident, you rupture that battery. Run, do not walk away from that vehicle. And when these hybrids, the Priuses and the Hondas and the Toyotas, by the way, Toyota's got a... So a hybrid, Ford has one, GM has one. These batteries last about 5 years. It really depends on how you drive them, but the cells in the battery design last about 5 years. When you have to replace that battery, you're looking at between $3,500 and $5,500. So don't think that just because you paid off your car in 5 years, you're done paying on that car. No, you have another $100 a month for the next 5 years when they start replacing those batteries. And then we're going to have to find something to do with those batteries because they're not very recyclable right now. Of course, some companies... Now let's get back and we'll talk a little bit more about alternative fuels. Ethanol has gotten a lot of bad press. It is not very efficient at very best if you're just really, really careful. In fact, I think there's a lot of pencil whipping going on the amount of energy that's used to make ethanol. You're at best going to get 1-to-1 or perhaps 1.1-to-1 energy return on the amount of energy it took to make the ethanol. Now, there are other problems with ethanol. First of all, the process by which it is made is called fermentation. That fermentation takes place in water. The ethanol has to be distilled away from the water using a lot of energy, a lot of BTUs. This is one of the primary reasons why ethanol is not very efficient. However, one of the things ethanol likes to turn into is CO2 and water. So the ethanol that you get is not anhydrous. That means it has some water in it. That also means it can't be piped anywhere. You can't put it in a pipeline and send it from Iowa to Southern California because it will rust the pipes. And by the time it gets to California, it's going to be about 30% water. Big, big drawbacks with ethanol. The best thing that you can do is find a local blender, dump it into local gasoline, and get it into somebody's tank as quick as you can before that turns to water. So these are the drawbacks with ethanol. Gasoline is, of course, consumed by most civilian and personal vehicles. The other fuel that's out there, and it kind of gets lumped together because it's called a biofuel along with ethanol, and it kind of catches some of the bad press ethanol does because people aren't really sure of the terms and they're not really sure of the technology. They just know it's all biofuel because that's what they hear on the news. Or that's what they hear down at the local restaurant when somebody says, gee, my canola oil has gone up in price because those bad men down there are making it into biofuel. So you get all this bad press, and none of it's true. None of it's true at all. The reason canola oil and corn oil and soybean oil are up has nothing to do with biofuel. It has everything to do with oil prices and world demand on food. So it covers everything and has nothing to do with the alternative fuel market. Take that to the bank, people, because that's the truth. Now, let's talk a little bit about biodiesel. Biodiesel is the other fuel. Biodiesel is what diesel engines run on. No, there are no spark plugs in a diesel engine. No, you cannot drive your Bonneville or your Ford Mustang down to the green pump and put diesel in your vehicle. It won't work. This is not combustion technology. This is compression technology. This diesel engines run on compression. Normal gasoline engine has anywhere from 7 to 10 to 1 compression ratios, which means when this piston is all the way at the bottom compared to all the way at the top, it's about 7 to 1 to 10 to 1 in a ratio. Diesel engines are different. Diesel engines run somewhere between 16 to 23 to 1. That means you're taking a large area of cylinder and you're smashing it down to 1/23rd its original volume. In that smashing motion, the molecules are shoved together with such energy that they explode. Very efficient. Biodiesel, unlike ethanol, biodiesel generates 3.2 to 1, 320% return on the amount of energy it takes to make the biodiesel. A much higher return on energy, much more efficient, much more efficient. Do not make a mistake, people. The United States of America moves on diesel fuel. Every roll of toilet paper, every pack of gum, every tennis shoe, every avocado you buy travels by diesel fuel. None of that travels by gasoline, okay? It travels by gasoline from the store to your house, and that's it. The rest of the transportation is done by diesel. So diesel is a really important fuel. Right now, it's almost $5 a gallon on the West Coast. I don't know what it is on the East Coast, but it's probably about there. The reason is, of course, the price of oil is up around $139 a barrel. That's one. The other is the chemical, the petroleum, because of the lack of refinery space, is being rerouted to other things, especially during summer months. That means last October, diesel fuel on the West Coast was about $3.78 a gallon. Now it's $4.98 a gallon. It's gone up $1.20 in 8 months. Absolute highway robbery. It takes $150 to fill up a diesel tank. Big trucks are really paying the price, and you are beginning to see it in the stores. Those national fuel contracts that people like Schneider and Yellow had with diesel suppliers, guess what? They ran out, and now they had to upgrade those contracts, and those contracts are at a higher price. Now, the independents, they can't afford to buy 500,000 gallons of fuel at a time. They buy fuel pump by pump, which means the price is sent directly to their bottom line, and it eats it away, and they can't raise their price because they have to charge the same as the big boys, or they don't get to haul anything. You understand what that means, don't you? That means that the cost of doing business goes up for the independent trucker, and they're going out of business. The small trucking companies are going out of business right and left. That is bad for America. Because you take out the competition in the transportation industry, and all innovation, all consumer protection is gone. So it's very important to have competition in this country. That's what we're all about. So let's get back to talking about biodiesel. How is it made? How do we make biodiesel? What makes it up? I know how we make regular diesel. We take petroleum out of the ground. We heat it up. We crack it. And we get diesel fuel out of it. Now, it doesn't do very well in cold weather, so we have to add some additives to it. Drives the price up a little bit. But guess what diesel fuel can do? Diesel fuel can travel through a pipeline. Diesel fuel can be trucked from Texas to Washington State, and it will work just fine. It doesn't rust anybody's pipes. It's a nice fuel. Biodiesel can do exactly the same thing. Can go right into a pipeline, can go right into a tanker truck. It doesn't rust a thing. Now, there's a difference between pump diesel and biodiesel. There are several differences. Let's talk about safety. Regular petroleum diesel has a flash point about 185 degrees. Not too many conditions out there get up to 185 degrees to get to the flash point. But compare it to biodiesel. Biodiesel has a flash point of 300 degrees. A much safer fuel. If you were to take a gauze pad with biodiesel on it, put it against your skin, wrap a piece of tape around your arm and keep it for 24 hours, guess what? It's not irritating. It's less irritating than a soapy wash rag would be against the same arm for the same amount of time. If you poured it on the ground, it's not hazardous. Totally biodegradable. Doesn't hurt the environment at all. It's non-toxic. Petroleum diesel? You don't want to do that with petroleum diesel. You don't want to get it on your clothes. You don't want to get it on your shoes. You definitely don't want it in the carpet of your car. You don't like the smell of it. Lots of people that drive a diesel Mercedes-Benz or a diesel Cadillac or a diesel truck, and they conduct business. They go to work or they go to church and they have to stop for gas. They put gloves on. They put an apron on. They do not want the smell of diesel fuel on their clothes. Terrible stuff. Guess what? Biodiesel doesn't have a smell. That's right. You don't smell like diesel fuel if you use biodiesel. Oh, there's more. There's more. Regular diesel fuel used to contain sulfur. That's one of the products that's in crude oil. And fortunately, in the old days, sulfur had one redeeming quality, and that is that it made the oil slippery.
Thank you.
The oil had lubricity to it. And with the new low-sulfur diesel fuel, we don't have that lubricity anymore, and so the older engines are going to suffer. So we have a caller on the line.
Hello.
Your first name. Where are you calling from? Is this Ann again?
Hello, Brooks. It's Hi Kingsbury calling from Victoria.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I was listening to you, and you haven't brought anything up about the algae. Listening to a lot about the algae that they can grow in small areas and like dump areas, and it produces something like 20 times greater than, and it produces, I think when used, I think it puts oxygen and water back into the air.
Yeah,
Tell me a little bit more about them.
Sure, you bet. Let me just talk about Green Star products for a second. They just came through a 12-month algae cold weather, hot weather test in Hamilton, Montana. You can read all about this by going to greenstarusa.com. But they have a special breed of algae. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the federal government was all over this back in 1965. They started an algae research program, and they collected algae from all over the world, did all kinds of fantastic research on algae for 30 years, and in 1995, they had collected algae that made, oh gosh, it made diesel fuel, it made kerosene, it made jet fuel, all kinds of neat stuff. But in 1995, Bill Clinton decided to defund and dissolve the program because gas was cheap and we really didn't need algae for fuel. Well, besides the guys that were running this thing just bawling their eyes out as they closed the doors, half the population of their research died. That is to say, the algae died. No one was supporting it. They turned the power off. Green Star Products came in and bought the library. This was 7 years ago. They started doing the research on it, and they found a couple of breeds that were just amazing for diesel fuel. One had 50% body weight in oil, and the other had 20% body weight in oil. Well, you'd think the one that had 50% was better, except that it bred or divided very slowly, about once every 4 or 5 days. The lighter weight algae divided every 4 hours. And so they started breeding the two algaes together. And after 5 years, they came up with a breed of algae that can generate between 4 and 10,000 gallons of oil per acre per year. So it's
my God, then why aren't they using it? Why isn't it out there right now? I mean, the whole of North America could be, independent from the oil completely.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And energy independence is what that company is all about. So in Salt Lake City, and there's been a huge press release on this just this last week, they are building a 5,000-acre facility that's going to be cranking out 10 million gallons a year of biodiesel made from algae. Now, lots of people have tried this. Lots of countries have tried this. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to figure out how to economically make diesel fuel from algae. It's not been done before. Yes, diesel fuel has been made from algae, but they're losing money on it because the algae are very difficult to grow. You know, they've been around for a couple billion years, and they get mad if you don't treat them right. They turn red and make beta-carotene. They put mucus around themselves. They stop growing. And you can't afford to put them in pipes and bags and tanks and artificial light and all that. It just doesn't work. So a series of patents have been filed, and this new algae farm that's going in Salt Lake City is the most advanced, most successful algae ever done on Earth. There are 12 countries involved in this effort, and it is going to change everything.
Oh, I just can't wait until it comes out. Is there any way that people with, let's say, like I've got a little Civic Honda, is there any way that I can convert that car over to reduce, is there anything out there that you could, that people can do? Like, I mean, there's a lot of people like myself that have small cars and say, oh my God, we want to conserve. I mean, I'm not driving as much, and if I do, I'll take a few people with me, and, you know, I'm being very, very careful on conservation right now. I think everybody, I mean, in Victoria, we've got these little tiny smart cars running around.
Yeah.
And they're biodiesel, and I think they could probably use, if we had the algae, I'm pretty sure we could be using it right as we speak.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The key to biodiesel is what's called feedstock. Now, you can use canola oil, corn oil, soy oil. Some outfits even use peanut oil, although that doesn't do very well because it doesn't take temperatures below 50 degrees Fahrenheit very well at all. Palm oil, which we have a world moratorium against because you have to cut down rainforest to grow the palms, so no one wants to use that anymore. But we have really, really seen some advances in algae in the last year. In this project in Salt Lake City, Indonesia, Malaysia, Egypt, Russia, lots of countries are involved in this, and it is going to be a success because it has to be. You're absolutely right. So the key to this is feedstock. To create a feedstock that is not driven by oil prices, not driven by food prices, and it stabilizes
exactly.
The fuel market. You know, you realize all this algae technology needs is flat land. Land nobody wants to farm, water nobody wants to drink, and it will, believe me, 3% of the flat land in this country, 3%, and we would be energy independent. We would not have to buy a drop of foreign oil to make diesel fuel. We could make our own.
Well, wouldn't that be nice if we could, if people would become aware that the petroleum industry has got everybody by the throat, and the best way to cut the strings is to cut away completely from oil.
Well, that's
and
true.
From and, all and the information that I've been getting, I mean, look what they're doing in Europe with the cow manure. I mean, my God, we've got enough cows here that we could do the same thing. I mean, there's just so much we can do. And I'm always looking for technology. Like, in my place, I have these little lights outside, but they're solar run. I mean, anything that I can do in any way, in any information I can get, I just pay it forward all the time because it's so important, you know?
Oh, of course it is. And, you know, we're kind of funny. Canadians and Americans, we've relied on our government for solutions for so long that we really don't know how to do it on our own. And now we have private industry that's come forward and said, hey, not only have we got an answer, but we've got a financial ability to make it happen. And certainly the government has been helpful. My goodness. Tens of millions of dollars in grant money have gone into these programs and low-interest loan money, and it's working. It's having its effect. But the bottom line is it's the consumer that drives this. And we can sit around and wait for it to show up at the biodiesel pump in our neighborhood, or we can get involved. We can invest in these companies. We can buy stock. We can make small contributions each year to local inventors or to companies that are doing this kind of research. The ability to change the global warming picture and to change the dependence of our nation and your nation on petroleum for fuel for our vehicles is in our hands. We control it. All we really have to do is decide to do it, and there's a way to do it.
A friend of mine was saying the other day, he said, oh, nothing's going to ever change until it starts affecting everybody. When it starts affecting a person personally, I think that's when they start looking at things. But but, you know, people can't afford to wait that long.
Well, in a sense, you know, Al Gore was right. When gasoline gets to around $5 a gallon, then it will hurt enough where people will do something about it. The disappointing thing for me is that there are organizations out there like the Alliance for Global Change or Global Awareness, Climate Change, that's what it is, Alliance for Climate Change, made an announcement recently that they're going to spend $100 million a year for the next 3 years for global warming awareness. But do you realize, even though they're going to collect that much money, they're not going to give one dime, not a penny, to technology that has the ability to reverse it. Not a dime. That is what makes me mad.
So it's going all to the investors.
No, it doesn't go to the investors. It goes to politicians. That $100 million a year is only going to political organizations. It's not going to technology.
It's my personal thing is we've got to... Where is the honest politician nowadays? They're all crooks.
Well, not necessarily. I have had a chance to get involved in some of the Washington State, for instance, Department of Agriculture and Department of Ecology and Department of Agriculture not economics, but ecology. And these guys are great. They work long hours, they're very concerned, and they show that concern by having meetings, by showing support, by giving grant money. In this state, they had what's called the Energy Freedom Fund. They put $10 million in it. Lots of biodiesel results came from that. I think every state has a program like that. But I've said before that I don't really believe there's such a thing as a government. What we have is a loose coalition of bureaucracies, and there are bureaucracies out there that are really doing work, and they need to be recognized. We don't need to all lump them together and say all politicians are dishonest. There are some really good ones out there.
Unfortunately, the good ones seem to get they don't get the public the light that they need. You know, they it seems the crooked ones are making a fool of everybody else. And I sometimes wonder why people buy what they say when there's answers right now that we could be doing at this present time that could be saving a lot of lives and a lot of people and a lot of hardship.
No question.
Cleaning up a planet at the same time.
You're absolutely right. You couldn't be more right. And it's kind of interesting that some of these politicians who are really doing great things will call a news conference and no reporters show up.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Like Ron Paul, he's such a wonderful man and he's out there to try to make things better, but you don't hear anything. I'll be here in Canada, and Europe hears all about him. We're all rooting for him, but I don't hear anything coming from your news media at all. It's like they've put a blackout on him.
Well, that's true, and unfortunately, the main thing about politics is exposure, and those that have mastered the ability to use the internet and use as much free exposure as they can, and in politics, free exposure is called news. If you could stay in the news,
yeah,
then you get free exposure. Unfortunately, and hopefully, maybe, Ron Paul will stay in the race, not just this year. I'm sure he's out this year, but there are other elections coming up. In 4 years, there'll be another one. You know, even Ronald Reagan ran for president several times before he made it. Getting that name out there is expensive, and it takes time. And this is going to be a very strange election in our country because we have, for the first time in a long time, we have a choice between two people that are so different that we really have to make a decision which way we're going to go as a nation. And it's going to be an interesting choice because both of them have severe drawbacks either way. But this is the first time where we really have radically different candidates.
I know. Most, a lot of Canadians up here refer to the three running candidates as the Three Stooges, unfortunately. We're taking a really good look at what's happening and saying, oh, my God, you know, what's going to happen? Because if people don't stand up, you know, and start saying, no, we're not going to buy this, it's going to hit here. It's hitting here too. We're having the effects as well. So it's like we're really concerned what's happening down in your end.
Yeah, well,
and as Washington basically is one of your leading states, and the last reports I heard was, you know, the chipping of all your driver's license, and anybody can actually access it through any sort of, you know. So my concern is like. I've heard of a lot of technology that would be free and clean, and we can use it right now, but it's just not getting the exposure it needs.
Well, here's what happens with new technology. You have great inventors who make a breakthrough, and they make an exposure to the public, but they do not have the ability to manufacture. They try to make it in their garage, or they try to get four or five buddies together, and they're going to make five or six of these a month and make some money at it. And that's not really what it takes. What it takes is American manufacturing know-how. We know how to do it. I mean, you know, building cars for 30 years, you learn stuff. You learn high-speed manufacturing, and you learn how to do it cheap, and you learn how to do it right the same way every single time, and using a lot of automation if necessary. That doesn't exist in the new energy era. It's a craft. It really has not come of age yet.
I see. Oh.
So the technology's out there. We hear about it, but nobody's building it. There are a few biodiesel plants in this country, not anywhere close to the 9 billion gallons a year that President Bush wanted to have made in 2008. Nowhere close to that amount of biodiesel. But the interesting thing is that the technologies have gone through a lot of generations because of the economic forces that are working. Most of the biodiesel plants have gone broke and gone out of business because they didn't have processes that could adapt to the market. They used old 1912 technology called batch technology, where you just make up a batch, clean it up, and sell it. Make up a batch, clean it up, and sell it. You can't make money that way. It takes 25 to 30,000 BTUs per gallon, and they just went broke. But there's new technology out there that can make a gallon of biodiesel with less than 2,000 BTUs. Now, that's power, and it is in manufacturing.
And that is something that we could probably start getting out there right now. Like, you know, if the consumer knows they can get a hold of it, and they know, like, there's a lot of people that have gasoline engines, and I know there's a lot of people out there that have fitted their cars to reduce the amount of, to have the gasoline run a little longer to cut back the cost. But, I mean, if there's something out there that the average person could put on his car to convert in some way, to make a cleaner, to clean up the, you know, and to maybe stop having to use, be oil dependent. I myself, as a human being, would be the first to take a step and say, I'm willing.
Well, there are additive technologies that can help gasoline engines get 30, 40, even 50% better fuel mileage. There's water injection, there's methanol injection. You can inject windshield washer fluid into your system and get some mileage out of that. There is that technology out there, and it's certainly cheaper than gasoline, and it is renewable. However, the solution is to get the diesel fuel demand down in the country so that you can free up the refinery space to make gasoline. And then the price of gasoline will come down as well. I promise you, if we could make half of the diesel fuel demand, which in this country is about 35 billion gallons a year, if we could make half of that using algae, the price of gasoline would drop like a rock, because we'd have the capacity back in our refineries. It would be like building 2-3 brand new refineries in this country. That is the solution.
It would also give people work. It would also give jobs back to people, too.
Right, and it would be good for national security because then we don't have to rely on countries like Venezuela, Mexico, and our friends in the Middle East, and we would have national security at a level that we have not known since the 40s or 50s.
Plus the fact that everybody else, you know, and the thing is I believe that North America could be the leading countries in the world, but in that we have to, as consumers, take a good look at what we're doing and say, I'm willing to take the chance on this and do something about it.
Well, that's true. And unfortunately, we're almost out of time. That means that global warming is catching up with us in a hurry. You know, we're up here today, June 8th in eastern Washington State, when it should be 80 degrees outside, it's 62. And it's been 20 degrees below the average yearly temperature up here all year. And people say, well, gee, where's the global warming going? Well, that is global warming. Some places get colder,
exactly.
And other places get hotter. We are feeling the effects of it. And I can tell you, we're about out of time. We don't have the time to bleed this technology out a little bit at a time and make as much money off it as possible. That's why companies like Green Star Products have 12 countries involved with them in Salt Lake City, with the state of Utah, and with BYU, because they want this technology to proliferate quickly, very quickly. Within 5 years, they want 12 countries to be as far as we are with it, even further, because we have to make a difference in the world. We've got to make more oxygen, we've got to reduce our carbon dioxide output, and we've got to find a cleaner burning alternative fuel like biodiesel to replace petroleum, because we're running out.
Yeah, we're certainly going to feel the effects if we don't do anything, too.
Well, that's kind of the way our country's been. I don't know about yours, but we're kind of the country that, well, I don't have to worry about it. I'll let my grandkids worry about it. Let's go on vacation, baby.
Yeah, we get a lot of Canadians like that, too, and I say they're complacent and stupid, and they're leaving nothing for their children, if anything, you know? So let's get off our butts and stop being complacent and lazy and start doing something positive for a change instead of becoming the two countries in the world that are the most abusive in the world right now. So I would like to change my country's, I'd like to people to think of my country in a positive way instead of a negative way. And I see it going very negative lately with the war and the fighting and the, you know, and all about the oil. It's all about profits. And, you know, it's like, it's about time we started taking a look at what we are doing ourselves, because what goes around comes around back onto us. And then we can't
That's
complain
true.
when we're sitting there wondering what happened to us, because we were part and parcel of what happened.
That's true. We can do this. We can do this. It is within our reach. It is within our generation's reach. We can reap the benefits from it now. We don't have to wait till our grandkids are our age before the benefits are reaped. We can do it right now. And I am within, literally, I am within 100 feet of the most advanced biodiesel plant on Earth. And it is a continuous manufacturing process that turns canola oil directly into diesel fuel in less than 3 minutes.
Oh, my God, that's wonderful.
It's going to go live here just any
that's
day.
That's absolutely just phenomenal. You know, it's like, can we not take this information to get it out even more? Because I always believe that if you go around to all the different high schools and the different, let's say, colleges and universities, and have somebody bring this information to these youngsters, because it's their future we're screwing around with. So if they recognize this, and they know that it's out there, then they are going to do an extra push about demanding this coming through.
That's right. That's right. And we need to get our universities involved. The Future Farmers of America would be an awesome program to have a biodiesel program in FFA. This plant that's just down the street from us has had tours with FFA, with business leaders of America. They've had senators in there, congressmen in there. I understand the governor is going to come down in a little bit. This is an amazing opportunity for this technology to take a quantum leap forward, a giant leap forward in our country. All jealousy aside, you know, there's a lot of backbiting in the alternative fuel business. If you don't believe me, just go to a convention sometime, and you'll meet more sourpusses in one building than you can imagine. There's a lot of belly aching going on in the world of new energy, but that should quit. We should pull together and get this technology out there.
Because it's not just a case of our countries anymore, it's a case of the whole world and humanity.
You bet.
And we have to realize that. My contention is we need more women in there to start pushing these things as well.
Exactly. And that's what it always takes. Everybody knows nothing happens until the women get involved.
Yep, I agree with that. My contention sometimes is too many men running the show. A little bit more women in there, and let's get the ball rolling. There's too many children, there's too many people that are suffering, and we've got to stop this. And we've got to start right now doing something about it. And I'm just putting it to anybody that's listening right now, you women, start bugging your husbands.
Well, I can tell you, too, that that's what makes it happen. I mean, it's said in, you know, everywhere that you go that the man is the head of the family. But everybody knows the woman is the neck, and the neck turns the head.
That's
so,
right.
women
I'm so happy to hear from you, and I'm glad you've explained a lot more to me. I'll contact you on your website because I'd like to get some more, if I could get some paperwork. I'd like to approach it with our university here in Victoria.
Absolutely. I can tell you one website, and man, this website is just a gold mine of information. There are videos there, press releases there, all kinds of pictures. Go to greenstarusa.com. The link is on x2-radio.com.
Green Star?
GreenStarUSA.com. Just put in all, it's all spelled.
Okay, I'll do that.
There's tons of resources there. And these guys love to communicate, so don't be afraid to write them. The press releases coming out of this country are absolutely shaking the energy world. The recent energy policy that the U.S. just passed a few months ago, this company was instrumental in getting that passed with some key pieces on cellulosic ethanol and biodiesel. They're really, really pushing the envelope and leading the way for other companies.
Wonderful. Thanks, Brooks. I really appreciate the talk, and I'll leave you so somebody can call in before it gets too late.
No problem. And remember, behind every successful man is an astonished mother-in-law.
Okay,
all right,
you take care.
Thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll take a quick break. About 5 minutes, 32 seconds, folks, and we'll be back after these messages. We'll talk a little bit more about global warming, and we'll talk a little bit more about algae technology. Great stuff. Don't forget, Tesla Tech, July 31st. We'll be back. Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get to Miles Technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. You're not getting all 3 hours. Send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Well, we don't know what's happening with our sound bites today, but... And that's the end of that commercial series. I must have had some kind of skip in my computer there. Sorry about that. Did you know that there's a pre-dinosaur era burrow that's been discovered in Antarctica? It's true, long before the age of the dinosaurs, something was constructing tunnels in Antarctica. A burrow has been discovered in the ancient floodplain of a broad Antarctic river only a few million years after a mass extinction ended the Permian period. The tunnel was preserved when a flood washed sand into it, forming a cast 35 centimeters deep and 16 centimeters wide, and even preserving claw marks scratched into the walls during excavation. Paleontologist Christian Sidor of the University of Washington thinks the den belonged to Trinaxodon, a small badger-like reptile closely related to mammals. A second candidate, of course, is the lizard-like reptile Procolophon. It's the bones of both animals have been found in Antarctica and South Africa. Just kind of interesting, let you know that life has been around on this planet a lot longer than people think. And we also want to let you know that we were talking about biodiesel before, and sometimes that palm oil has been used. There is a moratorium against palm oil because of the cutting of rainforests that it takes to generate the land to make the palm oil. And I should let you know that the lush tropical rainforests of Papua New Guinea are not the unspoiled haven that many believed till now. In fact, they are disappearing faster than those in the Amazon. That's the conclusion of a team led by Phil Shearman of the Remote Sensing Center at the University of Papua New Guinea in Port Moresby, who applied pattern recognition software to recent satellite images and paired the results with maps going back as far as the 1970s to reconstruct the rate of forest loss. The team presented its findings this last Monday at a workshop on climate change, forests, and carbon trading in Port Moresby. Their study found that in 2002, 1.4% of Papua New Guinea's forests were cleared or degraded, increasing to 1.7% in 2007. If the trend continues, more than half the forest that existed when Papua New Guinea became independent from Australia in 1975 will be gone by 2021. That's why there's a moratorium on palm oil being used as biodiesel. Now, palm oil is a lot more prolific than any of the other seed oils or bean oils for making biodiesel, but I can tell you right now, algae puts out a lot more than that. About 4,000 to 10,000 gallons per acre depends on how you put it together. X Squared Radio here tonight, coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, and we want you to call in tonight. We do have all the phone lines open. We've had a few good calls tonight. We are talking about new energy, and we're talking about oil prices, wind energy, solar energy, conservation, generation, and what new technologies are out there. I did want to let you know, if this is if you're just now tuning in, that The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 3, is out. We've been waiting for it to come off the presses. It just came off the presses. Brand new cover. Amazing book. Almost 500 pages. It's Unlocking the Secret, Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years. You can pick it up at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or if you want an autographed copy, just go to x2-radio.com, click on the Buy Now buttons. We have it in softcover, hardcover, and the audiobook is being recorded. Won't be very much longer. It will be out. This book reads really well. It has part one and part two. Part one picks up where the other books left off, talks about end times, technology and prophecies, things like that that are out there, predictions made by ancient civilizations, as well as historical documents, and it explains the things that have already come to pass that we talked about in the first two books. It's happening, folks. It's happening just like we laid it out. We didn't write the script. We just put the pieces together so you can find them all in one place. You don't have to read all 40 of the volumes of books that we read, going back to the Zohar and the Sefer Yetzirah and Popol Vuh and all of these obscure and sometimes cryptic sources for information. You can just simply buy the three books. It's about 1,500 pages altogether, and you'll have it all. Forward Magazine called it the most comprehensive book ever written on the creation of the earth, and it has all of the information that you need about the 2012 end times. The books were really predicted to come forward about 5,000 years ago, and these are the ones that fulfill that prediction. Call us up. Toll-free in the U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else, on-planet or off-planet, 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185. Or if you're using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. Or Pal Talk, you can reach us at simply BBS Radio. We are coming to you live through the BBS Radio Network, 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time. And we're also broadcasting live on the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. He has his own program Monday through Friday, The Kevin Smith Show. You can find that easily by going to kevinsmithshow.com. Next week, we will have Ann Druffel on. She is the author of two books, actually six books, but we're going to cover a couple of them. One is called Firestorm, and this is an amazing book, a tremendous amount of detail. It's almost 500 pages in length. The other is How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. Not exactly what you might think from the title. It's not quite as out there as you might think, but there's a lot more going on than you think. And Ann Druffel is one of the experts out there that knows what's going on. She's done a tremendous amount of research. You want to benefit from that research by being here with us next Sunday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 to 11 Eastern, 5 to 8 Pacific. Also want to let you know the authors of Witness to Roswell, that's Tom Carey and Donald Schmidt, have stuck with the story of the Roswell crash longer than anyone, have done more research, compiled more stuff than any two guys alive. They are the most up-to-date sources for what's going on relative to that crash. It's the crash that started it all in this country. Witness to Roswell is the book. You can find it by clicking on that cover at x2-radio.com, but there's more. There's more. They have reason to believe that this year, they, Tom Carey and Donald Schmidt, and of course we here at X Squared Radio, are going to go into the hangar that contains the ship recovered at Roswell. That's right. It's going to happen right here on this program. And you are going to be here listening to it if you just stay with us. A month-long swarm of earthquakes picked up again Sunday, today, as a string of minor tremblers rattled Reno, causing downtown high-rises to sway and knocking items off walls and shelves. Magnitude 3.9 and 3.7 quakes struck within a couple of minutes of each other shortly before 11 a.m. today, and were preceded by 3.2 and 3.0 quakes earlier Sunday, today, said researchers at the Seismological Library at the University of Nevada, Reno. Nevada is the third most seismically active state in the U.S. behind California and Alaska. Reno's last major quake measured 6.1 on April 24th, 1914. But this swarm of quakes has a very different pattern, a pattern seismologists have never seen before, and they're certainly learning from now. That pattern? The smaller quakes are starting first. Normally what happens is all is quiet, and then you have an earthquake, and then you have a series of aftershocks, smaller and smaller and smaller as time goes on. This is happening in reverse, folks. The little tiny smaller quakes are happening first and then the major quake. They don't understand what's going on. They're coming up to speed as quickly as they can, but one thing is for sure. Something is rumbling underneath Reno, Nevada. The same thing is happening off the coast of Oregon, out near the Juan de Fuca plate. The edge of that plate has notoriously been seismically active. But on the ocean floor are hydrophones. These are microphones that are cabled together, laying on the ocean floor. They've been there since the Cold War days, normally used to listen for possible enemy ships or submarines approaching the coast of the United States from the west, but recently have been used by the USGS, that's the U.S. Geological Survey, to listen to seismic activity below the ocean floor. A couple of very strange things about this, though. One is that the sound doesn't sound like earthquakes. It sounds like magma moving beneath the plates of the ocean floor. The problem is there are no volcanoes in this area of the ocean floor. This is brand new activity, and that rumbling has got a few people nervous, because if the Juan de Fuca plate has a volcanic event, people in the coasts near the west side of Oregon and the northern part of California would only have a few minutes warning before the tsunamis hit. Just to keep you on your toes, stay tuned to X Squared Radio, and we'll give you the latest if we can. We'll put it on the website for sure at x2-radio.com. We're live each Sunday here between 5 and 8 p.m. Pacific, 8 and 11 Eastern, and this is where we'll keep you up to the minute as best we can and give you the straight scoop. We have sources like Standeo, probably the best earthquake researcher on Earth, and we'll tap into that resource if we can. Gas is expected to keep climbing, putting greater pressure on consumers and businesses because the price of oil is soaring in futures markets. Light sweet crude shot up nearly $11 a barrel Friday and approached $140 for the first time. They are expecting $150 a barrel by July 4th. Along with higher fuel costs, consumers are also contending with higher prices for food and other goods because of rising transportation costs. Keep in mind, the price of grain, beans, barley, is not going up because of alternative energy. It's going up because of higher transportation costs, and these costs are being driven up by futures market investors. They're also being driven up by higher demand. Countries like China and India are coming on strong with their middle classes needing everything now. They want cars, they want trucks, they want motorcycles, and they want it all today. And it is putting huge demands on the energy market and also on the price of steel and copper, aluminum, brass, and fuel. Now we're going to talk a little bit this hour about the algae technology. We had a great call from Victoria, Canada, in the last hour. Algae technology is something that's, oh my goodness, it's been in the news so much the last 5 years, and there are a lot of people out there saying that they've made breakthroughs with algae, that they're making biodiesel with algae, and they are. There is some oil being generated by algae out there. There are some pictures out there floating around of people growing algae in bags. That's 30-year-old technology. There are pictures out there of people growing algae in pipes and little metal troughs, and that's out there too, and tanks with artificial lights. And there are even rumors out there of algae that doesn't even need light. I'll put that one to bed right now. Algae that grows without light consumes oxygen and needs sugar. That means it puts out carbon dioxide. That's correct. Goes in the wrong direction, folks. Don't listen. That rhetoric isn't going to get anywhere. Algae needs to feed on sunlight and CO2 to make sugar and free fatty acid, otherwise known as oil. Lots of algae get slimy. Lots of algae make different kinds of oil. Some can be useful for kerosene, some for jet fuel, and some for diesel fuel. You need a certain length of carbon chain to be useful for diesel fuel. Well, there are also other needs. Some algae is very good for a raw material called furfural. I know, you don't really hear about that on the futures market. But furfural is a great raw material for all kinds of other chemicals. Suffice it to say that there's a furfural crisis, a crisis in the chemical world. Anything that can make furfural cheap and plentiful will be very, very profitable. In 1965, the United States of America funded a program to start algae research. Well, start it they did. And the scientists that worked in that program, some were graduate students and some were professionals, was amazing. Nothing short of amazing. They went through thousands and thousands of different species of algae and found all kinds of benefits. Some of the benefits were pharmaceutical. Some of the benefits made different kinds of food for animals, for humans. Some of them made all kinds of feed supplements and fertilizers. And some of them made fuel. Then in 1995, due to pressures from domestic sources, that is to say, people here in the United States got sick and tired of all the programs and all the research, and they decided to cut back on those programs so that they could spend money somewhere else. That's called vote buying, people. That's called buying votes. That's what they did. They took great research programs like this, and they defunded them, took back the money, and gave it away so that people would elect them again. But a strange thing happened. All of this great research was published, and some smart companies got a hold of that information, and some smart companies, one of them was Green Star Products, moved in and made expeditious purchases and walked away with a wealth of information. And they also walked away with libraries of algae breeds. Now, some of them had died because of lack of care, lack of caretaking, and some of them did survive. You know, algae's been around for a couple billion years. They have a way of surviving. Well, after many, many years of research, some of the algae were determined to be very prolific. That is to say, they divided quickly. They bloomed. That's a botanical term, which means that they grew at a very, very unexplainably rapid rate. And companies really struggled to find what it is that triggers algae to make it grow so fast. Is it sunlight? Is it the time of year? Is it magnetism? Is it nutrients? Oh, they struggled and struggled. Finally, this company discovered the secret to making algae grow and make it proliferate. And also, the technology for collecting the oil out of the little beggars. That's much tougher than it seems. Countries have been trying to do this for 40 years, unsuccessfully. Let me qualify unsuccessfully before I go any further. I mean that they haven't been able to do it economically. Yes, you can get the oil out of the algae, but it takes a lot of energy. And it grows slow, and you got a lot of water to get rid of. And what happens if you get bacterial infections in your algae? Oh, there's lots and lots of things that go wrong. This company solved all those problems. They figured out how to make the algae grow fast. They figured out how to harvest the oil. They figured out how to make high-protein meal out of the algae, so you get two great products. Of course, you have that one great byproduct, oxygen, and you consume all the CO2 that you make in order to create the algae, and all the CO2 in surrounding processes like cellulosic ethanol or power plants or the generators that it takes to run the farm. They solved all those problems. And guess what? The technology is affordable. That means it's not super high-tech. That means it's third world countries can benefit from it and use it. And that means that the United States can benefit from it and use it. Last winter, they completed studies, a year-long study, extreme hot weather, extreme cold weather studies, of growing algae outside under controlled conditions that were very simple and low-tech. Guess what? It worked. They succeeded. They passed. And they made a global press release that had huge effects. New legislation was passed. New excitement in the area of biodiesel. And now, for the first time in history, a algae facility is being built outside of Salt Lake City. By early next year, maybe the middle of next year, it should be online, making biodiesel directly out of algae oil. Algae oil. That means that you don't have to plant a seed, wait for it to rain, spend the diesel fuel to cut it down and swath it and separate it, combine it, crush it, degum it, and get it all back into the system in order to make biodiesel at about Now, canola generates probably between 100 and 130 gallons per acre per year. One harvest, by the way. Algae does a little better than that, between 4,000 and as much as 10,000 gallons an acre, depending on the micronutrients and growth rate of the algae. And it does it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. No planting, no fertilizing, no diesel fuel, no tractors, no land that has to be used for farming, no water that has to be used for drinking. You get all the benefits, none of the downside. That facility is being participated in by 12 countries from around the world. Their finances are coming together to do one cooperative project inside the United States, and that technology is going to proliferate so fast, it might, it just might, have the ability to save us. It might have the ability to establish energy independence once and for all. No swings in feedstock prices mean no swings in fuel prices. In other words, diesel fuel could get back down to where people can afford to move things around the country, and nothing outside this country will affect that price. And that'll be good for the country. It'll be good for the planet. We'll make lots of extra oxygen. We'll save a lot of money. And we'll be burning something that doesn't pollute. We'll stop burning petroleum in our fuel tanks, belching CO2, carbon monoxide, and hydrogen nitrous oxides out into the atmosphere. That ends because, you see, biodiesel is non-toxic. Biodiesel is non-polluting. Biodiesel adds the lubricity, that's the slipperiness, the oilness of fuel back into your tank. So your engines will last longer than they do with petroleum diesel. Safe, non-toxic biofuel, biodiesel, that's the solution. We start making 20, 30, 35 billion gallons a year of biodiesel, and gasoline prices will come down because we will have generated refinery capacity again in our country without having to buy or build a new refinery, without having to buy foreign oil. There has not been a major oil discovery since 1976 anywhere on Earth. A few little pockets here and there, one in North Dakota recently, certainly the one in Anwar, which nobody wants to drill. Expensive to extract, shale oil, very expensive to process. You have to inject propane into the ground to get it out, people. That's how it's done. Not very environmentally friendly. Oh, on the surface it'll look fine, but under the surface we'll be doing all kinds of terrible things to the substrata. We'll pay for it, let me tell you. This is the way to do it. If you want to find out more, you want to find out how to get involved, end of infomercial, people. Go to GreenStarUSA.com. Go to Ameritrade. Go to whatever, wherever you buy your stock online. Check it out. Come on, GSPI. That's the symbol. Just check it out. You want to get involved in energy? You really want to do something to change the energy profile and energy dependence of this nation? You want to do something to reverse global warming? Just check it out. That's all I'm asking. Now we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming expedition to the North Pole. We're getting really excited, folks, because the people that we're talking to right now are the ones that can really do something about this. You realize that when we started on this process, this expedition was tried many, many times. Lots of people have tried to do this. The problem with it is that there's only one ship on Earth that can make this trip, okay? And that ship is the Russian nuclear-powered icebreaker, the Yamal. It's 450 feet long, 73,000 tons. It has 75,000 horsepower, and it's nuclear powered. It has the fuel to get there and back. It's the only civilian ship on Earth that can make this trip. There is no other. No diesel-powered ship can get there. Unfortunately, for everyone who's tried this, that ship costs about $2 million. $2 million to try to charter. That's not something that's doable by any one source. Forget about Discovery Channel, Science Channel, History Channel, National Geographic Channel. They don't have the money. That's not what they do. That's just way, way, way out of their price range. And that's just to charter the ship. That's not counting about what it takes to put all the film together, what it takes to get the experts together, what it costs to get scientists to participate. This is a $5 million expedition. So what kind of support does it take to get that going? Well, certainly we've had some donations, and that has helped. Certainly we won the 2007 first prize in the Genes of Galileo contest from Nippon Television Network in Japan. That helped. But it takes more. And so we have approached corporate America. We have approached those who have a great interest in being involved in environmental causes and in participating in awareness of global warming and the effects that it's having upon nature above the Arctic Circle. So we've made inroads recently, and they look very, very promising. So right now, for the 2009 expedition above the Arctic Circle to discover, among other things, the effects of global warming on flora and fauna above and below the ice, first time it's ever been done in this area, we are also going to have some B crews with us, that is to say B film crews, that will be doing other things. One of the things that people ask us about from time to time is, well, what happens, Brooks, if you're up there and you're in the ocean and you're 500 miles away from civilization and there's no rescue ships anywhere, and something a couple hundred feet across comes up out of the water and goes flying out into space? What happens then? Well, I'm not saying we have that 100% covered, but we will have the ability to catch that information on film. And let me tell you, people, if we catch an event like that on film and it goes into the IMAX theaters and you see it on Discovery or History or Science or National Geographic Channel, it kind of changes everything, doesn't it? There is kind of a Indiana Jones aspect to this expedition, is there not? And that's attractive to some people. But you know what? It's really not attractive to our corporate sponsors. At least that's not the feedback that we're getting right now. So the expedition is primarily scientific. Yes, we're going to try to save the polar bears. We're going to try to let people know what's happening to whales above the Arctic Circle at the end of the summer period. We're going to try to take film above and below the ice. We're going to try and take samples off the ocean floor. And we're going to try to prove or disprove the theory that the Earth might be hollow. No, we're not talking about journey to the center of the Earth. We're talking about real geology, real planetary geology. There's a theory out there called plate tectonic theory, and it says that the plates that make up the surface of the Earth upon which we drive and sail around are constantly floating on a pool of magma, and that pool of magma is what makes up the core of our Earth, and somewhere in the middle is some solid quasi-crystalline core, and that somehow that creates a magnetosphere around our planet. That we're basically a planet made of boiling rock upon which is floating a crust that floats around like tectonic plates pushing on each other and subducting underneath each other. But folks, it's a theory. And what has happened is factual information, measurements made by USGS listening posts around the planet, data collected from satellites going around the Earth, photography that's been taken of the Earth, in X-ray, infrared, visible, ultraviolet. We're beginning to see things a little bit differently. We're also noticing that the aurora borealis is maybe not completely generated by the sun. Perhaps it's generated by an ion stream that comes out of our own planet in the north and south pole areas. That stream of ions, that stream of magnetized ions, strikes our atmosphere and may interact with solar wind, but is independent of solar wind, and it makes this atmosphere of ours light up with charged oxygen particles. We call it ozone, but some of it puts off light, and we see it as ribbons of light. So confusing has this been to the science community that February of last year, the Themis probes were launched, and they are now in orbit, and we are currently, or at least NASA is currently collecting data for Jet Propulsion Labs to determine why the aurora borealis behaves the way it does. It's a mystery, and so we're spending lots of money to find out how to study that. What does it mean? Well, all this data creates legitimate scientific reason why we ask the question, why we form a hypothesis to prove or disprove if the Earth might be hollow. Some of this data, in fact, a lot of this data, is consistent with the idea that planets might form hollow, that there's a counter-rotation between the crust and the core, and there's some kind of gap, whether it's an air gap or a methane gap or whatever it is, we're not sure yet. But we want to find out. And if that's true, then there must be gravitational differences in the areas around our planet. And guess what? We have the ability to look at gravitation on our planet from space, and it ebbs and flows like an amoeba. That's right. It's not constant everywhere on our planet. It may be that it's actually lighter at the poles. If that's the case, then it could support Newtonian ideas that the crust might be thinner at the poles, at the north and south poles. Well, the south pole is generally inaccessible to such an expedition because the ice caps down there have been increasing in size, and they're tremendously thick. No way an icebreaker could even touch stuff like this. Some of the ice is 1,000 feet thick. However, in the North Pole, because of global warming, much of the continental ice shelves have broken loose. In fact, in 2006, the Northwest Passage opened. It opened to where ordinary icebreakers could get in there. But then in the winter of 2006-2007, it refroze. And in 2007-2008, it got a little thicker. It still opens a little bit in the summertime. Enough, where one ship can make it through, the Yamal. We may only have one window of opportunity, and that is the summer of 2009. And so we've set our sights on the summer of 2009 to charter the Yamal and go above the Arctic Circle to a place specified by our team historians and researchers. We're going to take 100 scientists, filmmakers, researchers, and they'll be from several universities. We have already had interest from Washington University and Stanford University, experts on polar plate tectonics. They're going to be able to take samples from a place on Earth that has never been seen by human eyes. Seawater that has never been sampled before, ever. Core samples off the bottom, 4,400 meters under the ice, that have never been seen before. The question is, what will we find? Well, one thing is for sure, we're going to find something that's never been found before. Life forms that no one has ever seen before. Sediments historical data about our planet that nobody has ever seen before. This is discovery. This is exciting. It's just as important as going to Mars, and maybe only slightly easier. Now, here are the positive things about it. Along this trip, we are going to have live broadcast from the deck of the ship 24 hours a day during the entire expedition. That feed is going to be fed to a series of websites. Those websites will provide access to every classroom in the world. 24 hours a day. We'll try to provide it in multiple languages if we can, live. Certainly Russian, Japanese, and English. We'll do our very, very best to get more, maybe Spanish as well. That will allow millions of students to participate in this expedition. And I don't mean just by watching. We're going to make it interactive. That means that these classrooms can send our teams questions while we're on the expedition, live. And if possible, we will either try to answer those questions or take measurements to give us information to answer those questions during the expedition. It's never been done before, but our corporate partners are going to be interested in this. And this is how we're going to bring this to you. So it is coming along, and hopefully we'll have a lot more progress to tell you about in the very near future about what has been historically called the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. We're going to try and keep the name because we have to back off a little bit on the Indiana Jones part and beef up the science part. So if we change the name, don't panic. It's still us. And we're still working on it. It's just that we have to make it fit the funding engine of those who can afford to do it. Now, if you want to help, you can still help by going to phoenixsciencefoundation.org. You can also go to phoenixsciencefoundation.com. They both work. They will take you to the website. There is a shop there where you can buy books and DVDs. And you can get involved by giving donations. You can write us emails, all kinds of suggestions. We still have over 60 spaces left on the expedition. It does not cost anything to be a Voyager because we are actually giving out the grants to people who are participating. However, we are looking for a very special team. And if you go to the website, you can click on the link that says Join Us under the APEX tab. That's Advanced Planetary Explorations. That's the corporation that is actually running the expedition. The Science Foundation will be giving out the grants for transportation, but that is that's the for-profit arm that's running it. And we're looking 42 seats for scientists and engineers, 15 seats for filmmakers, photographers, and historians, 3 seats for IT experts and satellite uplink experts, and 20 seats for exopolitics trainers and ambassadors, and 20 seats for the previous team members that were on the original expedition. Now, some of those 20 seats, the last one that I mentioned for previous team members and qualified truth seekers, are still open. So don't despair. Just because we've had 800 applicants for those 20 seats, do not despair, because you do not know the criteria that we're looking for in those 20 people. So don't be afraid. Just go to the website, answer the 6 questions that are, or 7 questions that are at the bottom, and send us the information that we're asking for. It's not hard to do. They're not technical questions. We want as much information as we can get from you during that so we can make our decision. When we go to choose the Voyagers, we will choose 100, and then we will choose 20 alternates. Because things come up, okay? Kids get sick. People change their mind. This is not going to be a pleasure cruise. Yes, there's going to be a lot of exciting things happen on it, but it is not for the lighthearted. This is not a cruise to the Caymans, okay? This is to one of the most inhospitable places on the planet. That's why nobody lives there. But it is going to be not easy, but it's going to be worth it. The information that we bring back will feed researching for perhaps decades. Not really sure. And we may not get a chance to do this again. We may only have one shot at it, and we want to make it a good one. So that's why we're taking the planning. And as I said, there's sort of an Indiana Jones aspect to it. Not going to take over the whole thing, but it certainly makes it interesting. Also at Phoenix Science Foundation, you're going to find out about the projects that we're working on right now. You'll be able to see some great pictures of technology that's available. We do new energy research. One of the great technologies that you'll find on the website is the live stream generator, which is done by Zero Point Research, which is out of California. Their website is zeropointresearch.com. One of the best energy experience technologies we have ever seen. It works. We have used it. We continue to use it, and we recommend it. And everywhere where we've demonstrated, it has been accepted with tremendous success. People love this technology. It does marvelous things for health and for the well-being of the people that use it, and it may have other uses as well. The technology was inspired by ancient Egyptian technology, which was discovered by William Henry and talked about. It was the inspiration of how this was all put together, and you're really going to be excited if you get to that website, zeropointresearch.com. Check it out. That is about it for tonight. We have had a good show tonight. Next week, don't forget, we have Ann Druffel coming on. She's the author of Firestorm, a fantastic research documentation on UFO research, and also the author of How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. Not what you think by the title, believe me. You're going to love this interview. We are coming to you live on the DBS Radio Network and also live on the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. We appreciate you more than anything. Without you, we would not be here. And we'll see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth explorers, that you are source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth explorers.